Tom, lots to discuss. I guess let's start with the Eskimos. Simply, they're just not good enough to compete right now with the top teams in the West, at least when they play them.
Yeah, Greg, it's, you know, going into Labor Day, we discussed it's make it or break it time, and this will prove what this team has in terms of gumption and a chance to beat one of the better teams in the league. And that was something that was questioned about this team going into the Labor Day back-to-back. And I think it's pretty clear now that the Eskimos are chasing everyone else, and they don't have that extra level that the Saskatchewans, Winnipegs, and Calgary's of the CFL seem to have. It's disappointing. Trevor Harris is hurt. It felt like there was a spark early on in that game for the Eskimos, Greg, but after that bad penalty and then the Harris injury, it started to feel like last Monday when the Eskies were in Calgary, and it seemed like there was no hope left for that team and minimal spark. So, I mean, they're going in the wrong direction at the wrong time of the year, and it's disappointing. And I suppose we start to shift our focus on how this team can possibly be effective when it comes to the crossover.
Well, that's where they're going. Right now, it would seem like a major surprise if the Eskimos don't finish in the crossover position, because they're now, I know they're technically only one win behind Calgary and Saskatchewan, right? 2 points back, but each team has a game in hand. So I guess it's maybe not that unrealistic, but they'd have to play well. The thing is, Ottawa is 3 games behind them, all right? Because you only have to tie Edmonton. So and Ottawa just lost to Toronto, right? Is Ottawa suddenly going to get on fire here in the second half? I don't think so. So I look at the Eskimos. They got to regroup. They got a bye week. They just signed Matthew Betts. That could help for depth, sure. But I look at them, and they have a really good Hamilton team coming in on the 20th. It's Ricky Ray night. They've really not been good since the midway point of the season. They're 0-3. It's all against teams with winning records. And really, they're 0-5 when you look at their record against Winnipeg and Calgary. And that's just, it's really, you can't argue that they're just not good enough. So to me, whatever, I don't care where the game's played, I would think the Eskimos are the underdog when Hamilton comes here in 2 weeks.
I think that's fair, Greg. And these, I mean, you look at the BC game that's a few weeks away. That one you pencil in as a win. The Red Blacks game, you pencil in as a win. You have to if you're the Eskimos, but you got to go out and compete, obviously. But if this team's going to show any fight, yeah, it starts with the Ticats on the 20th. But even to close out the year against Saskatchewan, that'll be the test to see if this team can build a little bit of momentum going into the postseason on either side, whether it's the East or the West. But it's a pretty daunting schedule in these last 6 games. And even the stuff, you know, the TSN cameras caught on Saturday with the guys getting into it on the field, Vontae Diggs and Josh Johnson, that's stuff you don't want to see at this time of year. I know emotions are firing on all cylinders and everything's going crazy when you're playing the Stamps back-to-back, but discipline continues to be, it's the same story over and over and over again. And if you're an Eskimo fan, I think it's a little bit disappointing. And this is going to be an interesting stretch, but not reassuring after these last few games here.
Tom Gazzola joins us. Tom, Dave Tippett outlined some interesting things today in a press conference. You know, he obviously wants to play McDavid and Draisaitl together to start. They're going to be cautious with McDavid, but he felt optimistic that he's looking good watching him skate, and everybody's seen him skate the last few days. He looks okay. But a few things stood out to me. Number one, he does not have a clear – he says there's no starting goaltender. They're going in as a competition for training camp. Who do you think wins that job, or do you think no one does and it's going to be close to a platoon?
Okay, Greg, I've been saying all summer long that Mike Smith will be the starting goalie by the end of the season. If Dave Tippett is just telling them that it's a competition right out of the gate, it might be Mike Smith starting in net for the Oilers here. Mikko Koskinen surprised us off the start when he finally got into a stretch of games in November when he took over for Cam Talbot. But everything came crashing down to earth for him, just like the rest of the team, granted. and the defense wasn't great, and he didn't get any support on getting pucks out on the wings as well. But my gut instinct is giving the nod to Mike Smith. And if you're Mike Smith, you're thinking about how you played in the postseason. He had some strong games when he got in. You forget about what you did in the regular season because obviously that didn't go ideally for him. And the other thing that Smith has going for him is he's a veteran of this league, and he knows what it takes to be a starter in this league. Now, how long he can sustain that at 37 years of age, I don't know. But I would give him the slight edge, just putting all those factors together over Mikko Koskinen. Koskinen obviously didn't really end the year off particularly strong. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Mike Smith on opening night on October 2nd in goal for the Oilers. I mean, that's my reasoning for it. I know Tippett said he wants to ideally give each guy 41 really good games, and that would probably be beneficial to the Oilers. But I think there's still question marks when it comes to Koskinen. Like, last year was the most hockey he's ever played as a professional. Prior to last year in Finland, the most he had played was 49 games in a season. And so I think, you know, can you teach an old dog new tricks at 31 years old in the National Hockey League? Can you teach how to be more durable to a goaltender? I don't know. Have we seen that before? I can't recall anything off the top of my head. So that's where I say, hey, maybe Smith does have the edge. Plus, add to the fact that he does have a rapport with Tippett as well. And you can't deny that that wouldn't be a factor.
Yeah, potentially. I think, you know, he knows Smith, and that's what he said. He knows him. And Koskinen, it's going to be about, like a lot of players on this team, you got to show them what you can do. If you're a competitor, the competition, I believe, is good. And when I look at the Oilers roster, out of 20 spots, well, I guess let's say 19, right, because there's only one starting goalie every game. So out of 19 spots, I would say there's four top six spots that are pretty much locks. I would say there's three defense spots that are pretty much locked. Well, four. I think Russell, Nurse, and Klefbom are your three left defensemen, and Larson's your right defenseman, so there's two spots open there. And there's eight spots on forward that some guys I think are going to fill, and I just don't know where they're going to play and how much they're going to play, and then obviously same in goal. And that's a good thing. Usually competition breeds better overall team results because these guys are competitive. You don't get to the NHL and you don't remain in the NHL if you're not willing to fight for your opportunity. And everybody's coming into camp with kind of a clean slate, I would think, for the most part. And we'll see who grabs those spots. Let's talk about the bottom six two lines. Dave Tippett outlined that he's not calling it a third line center or a fourth line center because he really sees his bottom six and his top six. And his bottom six is going to be like a heavier, harder to play against line, and then a quicker, smaller line with more potential to score goals. So I look at that quickly. I say, okay, well, Sam Gagner, I see Nygaard, I see Marody, I see Yurko, I see Haas kind of fitting in on that role. You know, maybe even Tyler Benson, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay, a couple things. Interesting and good problem to have is the fact that, you know, the Marodys, the Bensons, I don't think we'll put Yamamoto in this bracket just yet because of his injury, and it might be beneficial just to start him in the minors this year. But there's actually guys now that played in the system that are pushing the vets. So those bottom six spots and the guys who are coming in as incumbents, it's not just a gimme that they're going to be on this team. And then you've got the two Euros coming. So another good problem to be having. If you look, like you said, with Tippett bringing up the fact, you know, maybe he wants to go with a skill quicker line and then a heavier line. So then you look at that and you go, well, Jujhar Khaira has got to be on the heavy line. Who would you put on the right side?
Well, you got Chase on Kobe Cassian.
Chase on Cassian. But are you starting Cassian on that top line, though? Because it sounds like we're going to start Cassian out there. Are we not?
Potentially, yeah. I'm just saying, right. You're looking, guys. But starting there and changing up, like I don't I'm not going to sit here and say that Zach Cassian's going to play in the first line all year. He might, but right. I don't think it's a lock by any stretch. He's played first line in the NHL. Well, I guess he did a little bit with the Sedins for a while. But
sure.
And really, when I looked at that year with the Sedins, he only played like 300-some minutes with the Sedins. It wasn't like it was for a whole season, not even close. So, you know, he's done it in bits and pieces. And who knows, maybe he just felt comfortable. He gained some confidence doing it last year. The thing I liked about Cassian was he always said, I'm not changing my game. If all of a sudden I try to be a finesse player with those two, I'll be off that line. I got to do what I do well, and hopefully it complements him, and we'll see if it does.
Yeah, and that's probably the right way to go about it. By the way, Draisaitl, McDavid, and Cassian were a line at today's captain's skate, just as an aside there. But, yeah, Kara looked good today, but granted, keep in mind, they're only going three-quarters speed, and you know, they're not pushing things. You've got Kobe Cave in the mix. Shehan, I guess, would be, say you want to go on the heavy line. Kara, Shehan, who would you put on the right side there? Haas? But he's listed as a center, and then... You know, Cave, you can slide back and forth.
Well, I think you got Alex Chase on. Where are you playing him?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I did my mock lineup, but I still have him on the second line. But if Neil's going to be starting on the second line, or pardon me, on the right side, then yeah, you got to slide him. You got to slide Chase on down. So, yeah, there's what, like 10 guys in the mix for the bottom six. So this could move all over the place. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. We'll see how it goes. I'm curious to see how Nygaard and Haas do when it comes to their North American test.
Well, expect them to get a lot of preseason, according to head coach Dave Tippett. As Tom Gazzola joins us in the Gazzola Chronicles, the right defense. And Tippett was, someone asked, well, who do you want to play with Klefbom? And he says, someone good. And he kind of chuckled. He says, hey, we've got some candidates. He does like the left versus right. He would prefer to have Chris Russell play on the left side, which I think is good. And he outlined, the thing I liked about Tippett was he outlined his response as to why. He says, you know what, when you look at your foot positioning when you're playing the offside, your stick positioning, it really impacts a lot of things at what happens. And he believes if Russell gets to play his natural side, he'll be able to move the puck a lot better. And that should help the team. So that leaves, you know, you look at Benning, you got Pearson, you got Bear as right shot defenseman. And then you got Caleb Jones, who I know is a lefty, but he played right side pretty much all last year in the American League, according to Jay Woodcroft, his head coach, and did there quite well. Now, I think Matt Benning right now heads to camp leading in that position, and then it'll be up to him if he holds on to it.
So you're saying Klefbom, Benning in the second pair?
Yes.
Okay. The one question I would bring up is, does this elevate Joel Pearson to get the two Swedes together? Does Dave Tippett give him a look with Klefbom? I mean, neither one of them is really physically imposing, but I suppose if you want Klefbom to play responsibly and then let Pearson run on the offensive side of things, maybe he gets a look with Klefbom, and then you have Benning and Russell on that third pair, and leave Jones as a seventh D-man. That's the only other option I would, you know, bring up. But, you know, it's funny, Benning gets a knock, and he went through being the whipping boy around here last season, and obviously he's still a young defenseman in the league, but I think he's a serviceable and ideally fits in your third pair, but... He can slide up every now and then, and I think he won't hurt you as badly as some people seem to think. So I think he's a lock to be a second-pairing guy in this league. Probably not, but he's probably going to try to prove people otherwise. So, yeah, I would put Benning and Pearson, you know, rotate those two between the second and third pairing, see what you got. I don't think it's ideal putting Jones on the right side off the get-go. Into a tough spot. I think you want to, if Jones is going to be the guy that makes this roster, you want to ease him in, especially being a second year, let's say, NHLer, because he did have a decent, you know, 20 games last year, but it was towards the end when he was playing in the first and second pairing that he was getting exposed. And I think you want to insulate him a little bit, and that would be ideal. So my only point of intrigue would be to see where Pearson ends up, and if maybe he ends up being a Swedish tandem with Klefbom.
Yeah, I never get into much of the nationality stuff. They've never played together before, so I don't know if it really matters there. I look at experience and more so comparison defend. Because Dave Tippett outlined, he said, if we don't cut down our goals against, we're not making the playoffs. It doesn't matter.
Right.
And I look at it. Those guys, you know, with Klepon, maybe they can move the puck up well, but you look at Pearson playing with Chris Russell, that maybe they look and say, hey, in selected minutes, you know, Pearson can be a guy that we can have move the puck up a little bit more often. And because if you're in their top four, you are going to play. If you're not playing the first line, then you're usually playing against the other team's second line.
Yeah. But let me ask you this, Greg. How long does Nurse Larson stay a pair? Because they had their troubles last year as well when they were together.
Yeah, in 2018, though, they were actually pretty decent together. If you look at the underlying numbers, like a lot, last year was kind of tough. Larson had a really off year. So,
yeah,
you know, how can he rebound? We'll see. I think Jim Playfair's defensive scheme and the fact that Dave Tippett's going to encourage his defensemen to use the middle of the ice, not just ring it around the boards, I think that's going to help. So, it will be interesting to kind of see how preseason goes. And, you know, there's lots of opportunities, I believe, in a lot of different positions on the Edmonton Oilers. Tommy, quickly, what's your thoughts? I know you try to be a fashion guru. What'd you think of Cam Newton?
Oh, thank you, Greg. Absolutely awful. And I know he's trying to be this style icon. And I know, like, when the cameras are rolling and the guys are rolling into the stadium, he wants to show off whatever he thinks looks good. But I'm sorry, that cut-off suit with the short-sleeve blazer and the shorts with the hat and scarf that I think my Nona, wore to a funeral back in 1962 looked absolutely terrible. And I understand the whole scarf thing. The Euros do it. They do it very well. But I don't know what Cam Newton was thinking with that look yesterday. He looked like something my grandma would wear back in the 60s. So I think he needs to dial it back a little bit. I appreciate and admire the guys at like trying to bring the style. Like Aaron Rodgers, when they rolled into Winnipeg, wearing the Canadian tuxedo, fantastic. But Cam Newton is just bordering on bizarre now. It's a no good. It's like when Sean Avery tried to wear shorts with a suit years back and took credit for this new wave of style, which obviously didn't take off, but Cam Newton seems to have embraced years later. It's not good. The classics usually work. You can jazz them up nicely, but what Cam Newton did was a big-time no-no in my books.
Kind of like wearing a $350,000 watch on the football field. I think you're just starving for attention if you do
that. How do you get away with that?
Well, he's going to get fined. That's kind of ridiculous, though.
That is ridiculous. Yeah.
Focus on
ODB.
Yeah. Talk to you tomorrow, Tommy. Have a good one.
Sounds good, Greg.